There's a lot going on in the city of Chicago and America. We're suffering from the hangover of the 4th of July weekend. Mayor Johnson is in panic again. Mayor panic attacks in panic. 100 people shot, 19 killed at least, more to come. And he blames Richard Nixon. Yeah. I'd recall his ass immediately. Somebody who studied Nixon, a student of history, and who's been on crime scenes, and I've seen him there, and I've seen him announce charges, murder charges against people who kill children, gangbangers who shoot children, will be our guest on the Chicago Way podcast. He is Gary McCarthy, former police superintendent of Chicago, current chief of police of Willow Springs, someone who's given his entire life to being a shepherd to protect the people, because that's what cops do. They become German shepherd dogs, and they want to protect people. That's what drives them to the job. That's what drives them to the hell that many of them in Chicago and elsewhere are facing. And where are you? As the Democratic Convention in Chicago looms, as Chicago rages, and President Joe Biden's health, mental health is questioned, as the deep state begins to turn to stab him in the back, you're on the Chicago Way podcast with Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, and me, John Cass, executive editor of John Cass News, your place for a good cup of Midwestern common sense, and Gary McCarthy, former police chief of Chicago, on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way, that's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As the president of the country is running under siege, as Chicago is running under siege, as the Mayor Johnson wrings his hands helplessly in one of his panic attacks, unable to deal with 100 shootings and 20, at least 20 dead from the spree of July 4th. And here is, as promised, Gary McCarthy, former police superintendent of Chicago. You might remember Chicago when it was safer. That's because Gary McCarthy was in charge of things. Welcome to the Chicago Way, Gary, superintendent.
Oh, great. Great to talk with you again, John.
Good to hear you too, my friend. So what do you make of the, Jeff wants to know, what do you make of the 100 shot?
Well, I blame NASCAR. Because people could have been peacefully looting downtown. Instead, they were pushed into the neighborhood, and the top blew off.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Forgive my sarcasm.
Yes,
but you know, I can't help it. The most recent thing that blew my mind about what's going on in Chicago is that Brandon Johnson made this big announcement about how he got $10 million. That he's going to put into caring for victims of gun violence after they're shot. And the first thing that popped into my head was, you know, why don't you put that $10 million into preventing them from being shot? And you don't have to do that. And with that, I kind of did a little step back and I looked at what's going on. And Larry Snelling is saying all the right things in my mind. And, you know, Larry and I, he used to work for me and I liked the guy. But he's saying one thing and the mayor's saying another. You know, Larry's talking about how people have to be held accountable. He's talking about prosecutions and so on. Yeah. There's so much that goes into this. But all Brandon Johnson is talking about is equity and social justice and things like that. The first thing you have to do is make a city safe if you want to succeed. The tax base is leaving. People are fleeing Chicago. And, you know, you can't succeed until people start to feel safe. And there's ways to do that. And, you know, you guys have given me the opportunity to go back and pull out some old documents and stuff that I had here.
You love them. And you love the stats. Okay, let's go.
Yeah. Well, here's the first thing that I got to tell you. You guys need to go to the Chicago Police Department annual reports. Because I just checked again, and about a year ago, somebody did a news report where they said that during my tenure, crime plummeted, but complaints against officers skyrocketed, which is patently false. And the first thing I did was I went to the Chicago Police Department website. You go to annual reports, and these reports go back to 1965, but mysteriously, between 2010 and 2017, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 are all missing. Isn't that curious that was my tenure?
Well, I'd appoint a state's attorney to investigate, but they're all in Tony Preckwinkle's pocket, and I don't think they would.
They deleted my numbers.
Jesus.
I can't get over it, but... But here's what we did, and you know, this is what I learned coming up in New York. I came up in such a perfect place and time. I was really fortunate. There's a saying in golf, I'd rather be lucky than good. And I was certainly lucky. I caught the sergeant, lieutenant, and captain's test successively. So I made captain.
So you actually passed those tests. You didn't just get appointed to them because someone wanted a pink guy in the high office. You actually passed those tests.
Yeah, there's no meritorious promotions for sergeant, lieutenant, and captain in the NYPD.
In Chicago, though, what about Chicago?
Yeah, the meritorious process, which, by the way, I endorse. I actually endorse it, but it has to be done properly. And here's a great example. You know, you can promote detectives, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, everybody above there is appointed, but you can appoint them meritoriously. And one of the best examples of how I tried to make things legitimate was I started an interview process. It used to be that somebody would recommend you, there would be a board that would get together, and it would probably be some sort of horse trading. I want my guy, you get your guy, and so on and so forth. I actually conducted interviews of everybody who applied, which took an awful lot of my time up, but it gave me a sense of who was on the ball and who was not. And the best example that I could give you is, and I'm going to say his name, and I hope I'm not embarrassing him, Phil Klein's son, Matt Klein, was obviously head and shoulders the best candidate who came in for a meritorious promotion to lieutenant. And I didn't promote him in the first group. And I called Phil and I told Matt, I said, look, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to do that to you because people are going to say that you only got this position because you're Phil Klein's son, the former superintendent.
Right. I would have jumped on it. I would have jumped on it as a columnist. I would have said that's a...
Of course you would. Of course you would. But it was clearly not the case. And as a result, I think I did the right thing. You know,
was he ever promoted?
Oh yeah, he got promoted to lieutenant. He retired as a deputy chief last year. He's working for, I believe it's Citadel. So he landed in a good spot. Good for him. I didn't have those opportunities because I didn't know I was leaving until I was gone. And, you know, nobody cared that I didn't have a means to support my family. And there was no deal made. It wasn't one of these things, Gary, I need you to go. And, you know,
and there was no sorrow for you. There were no violin songs and no radio. I could tell you there were no radio hosts at that time singing the lamentations for Gary McCarthy. But they should have known. I mean, I guess you can't expect people to see the future, but you could look ahead now from that point and see that the dynamic in politics was we can't put people in jail because maybe they could be black and they could be Latino and I don't know what else. And so we can't put them in jail. And that creates a generation of criminals, in my view, criminals who don't have any concern about consequences, and a culture that becomes deflated, a culture without a spine. And we're seeing it all play out every day, every weekend in Chicago. What do you guys say about it?
Well, there's definitely a lot to that, John. I mean, that is a dynamic that's going on under Kim Fox that we didn't really have. Listen, I have argued with prosecutors going back decades. You know, I can't believe next weekend, I'm coming up on my 43rd year in policing. I got sworn in on July 13th, 1981. And I've had my fights with the prosecutors. Don't get me wrong. But it was never to this degree that people are just not getting prosecuted and they should be getting prosecuted. So that's absolutely a huge dynamic. But people, you know, there's urban legends here in Chicago that have to be busted. People say stupid things like back in the day when people like Jeff Fort was still running things. With these mega gangs. Those were the good old days. There were more than 1,000 murders.
If only we had the outfit running things. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's absolute urban legend. It's not true. And the other thing that I think we get locked up in is complaining about resources. Now, obviously, size does matter. But it's more important what they're doing than how many you have doing it. You know, if you've got 100 cops who aren't doing anything and you have 50 who are, I'd take the 50 who are doing things. And morale matters when you've got a mayor who is talking about defunding the police. Yep. And you've got a guy like Larry Snelling, who, you know, certainly looks and talks the part. They're not on the same page. They know that nobody has their back. They know that at any time, you know, they can make a mistake. And the next thing you know, their family's in jeopardy, their mortgage, their children, everything.
Let's ask Gary about the mayor panic attacks. And you've heard about them too, Gary.
Yes.
And coppers talk, you know, the details. You can't hide anything if you're a politician. Future politicians, take note. You cannot hide anything from the man who's putting you to bed and waking you up in the morning. You can't hide it forever. So panic attacks blames Nixon for the 100 people dead. What do you make of that, man?
Well, it's fascinating. It really is fascinating. It's fantasy. You know, I was a history major in college. I actually thought I was going to be a lawyer at one point because, you know, in my family, the expectation is you're going to do better than your parents. My dad was a cop. My dad was a cop and my mom was a nurse. So, you know, the expectation was I was going to go to law school. NYPD came up. I always wanted to be a cop. And I said, fine, I'll go to law school on the city's dime, hopefully get a scholarship. And the next thing I know, I was, you know, I found my perfect place and time. I love being a police officer. As a matter of fact, the thing that I absolutely loved most about being superintendent was every Friday or Saturday night, I would go out on patrol. And I'm out there making arrests with police officers. The best conversations that I had were on street corners at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning, in places like Englewood and West Lawndale.
Yeah.
So leadership matters. And I think there's a complete void of leadership politically in Chicago right now.
That's the truth.
And the bottom line is that affects right down to police officers sitting in beat cars. And I'm not sure if people realize that. Leadership isn't about go do that. It's about come with me and do this. And I think that, you know, that structuring the department the way that we did, we use business management. And that's what I was about to say before. This is what I learned in New York. I got to the rank of captain just about the time that Bill Bratton came into town and changed the way that we do policing nationally, which is proactively rather than reactively. Rather than going to a crime scene and picking up shell casings and bodies, we would track where crime was happening, go after it, and prevent the next crime from happening. That's called data-driven policing. But at the end of the day, they eliminated the data. Look at the gang database. It was the most successful thing that we did was we tracked gang members, gang turfs, gang conflicts citywide. So if Gary McCarthy is a Red Hot Chili Pepper and I got shot here, right?
Right.
We would know who the Red Hot Chili Peppers were in conflict with, and everybody wouldn't go to the scene. We would send people to the places where the retaliation was about to happen and grab the Red Hot Chili Peppers with guns. Preventing the next shooting. And what did we do? They eliminated the gang database because they said, you know, it wasn't accurate. You know what? Intelligence is not always accurate.
Right.
It's intelligence. It doesn't mean it's fact. But guess what? That was the lowest number of murders that we had in the city since 1964 in 2013 and 2014. That wasn't an accident. That was structural. Putting the right people, putting them in the seats, giving them the authority and making them go do their jobs.
Well, you guys have to deal with the real trouble here. When you, if you put people in jail, they kind of cry about it. They don't want to be in jail and their mommies don't want to be in jail. So they won't. So everyone's supporting the coppers, like, please put these thugs in jail. But then when you do, mommy and auntie hold news conferences screaming that Gary McCarthy is an unfeeling racist, don't they?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And the media carries that stuff because, well, I understand from my time in that in the den of iniquity, yes, that is media, that the truth doesn't really bother them as much as low ratings. And high rating, having mommies scream racism at white coppers and then having white socialists coming in demanding firings is better for ratings. Yeah.
And it's beyond, it's worse than that, John. You know, the Department of Justice, it's such a conundrum what has been going on. I actually did a very brief paper about this in 2016, I believe, when New York exploded with the ACLU attacking the quote unquote stop and frisk policy, which is not a policy, they're called Terry stops. And the ACLU and the Department of Justice is not the law on this. The law is they're called Terry stops based upon a 1968 Supreme Court case of Terry versus Ohio. And it says that the police can stop people based upon reasonable suspicion and frisk them based upon the fact that they may have a weapon. Okay. When the stop and frisk issue hit New York City, I was in Chicago and my press guy came to me and said, hey, listen, you know, what are we going to do about this?
Right.
Because they're going to come after you. You ran New York's crime strategy for 7 years. I said, we're going to do analysis. And we did a 2-year analysis of who we stopped, when we stopped, and where we stopped them. and we compared it to crime data. In other words, if John Cash gets robbed by a 65-year-old man with salt and pepper hair wearing a black shirt that says Chicago Police Department, and we go and stop a black man, we're doing the wrong thing. Well, it turns out in every one of the 77 communities in Chicago over a two-year period, who we stopped, when we stopped, and where we stopped was within 1-2% of the description of an offender based upon a crime complaint or an arrest. And you know what that meant? That meant that we were being accurate, doing the right thing at the right place. It's not about arresting everybody. And guess what? In Englewood, 100% of the offender description was for robberies, murders, and I forget what the third crime was that we used. Robberies, murders, and shootings was a male black, 100%. And the population of Englewood is something like 98% African-American.
Right.
So those 2% of white guys, if we do what the ACLU wants and stop a third, which is generally what Chicago is, African-American, Hispanic, and white, those two white guys in Englewood wouldn't be able to turn the corner. That would be unconstitutional. But that's what the Department of Justice used to say, that we're disproportionately stopping minorities. It's well, such
it's crazy because, Gary, you know, what is the ACLU going to say now that we're not, you know, we're not holding anybody, there's no bail and no cash bail here in Illinois, when the crimes that are violent that do raise to the level of being held and put behind bars right away, but that disproportionately is one race or the other. What are they going to say then? Oh, well, that system's, you know, racist because you have violent crimes. I mean, how are they going to move around that? Because it feels like that's where we're headed.
Yeah. Well, what they're going to do is, you know, my sergeant's test when I was in the NYPD was challenged by the black and Hispanic fraternal organizations. And the judge determined that the test was not racist, but the results were.
Right.
I still can't figure out what that means. But as a result, the whole thing got flipped over and they added a B list and so on and so forth. And I presume that's what they're going to say. The very same Department of Justice that was bringing police leadership to Chicago to learn what we were doing in 2013 and 2014 came into Chicago and said that it was great. The press actually asked me before they came out with their findings, if you remember when Loretta Lynch said that she couldn't find me in River North to interview me, the very same DOJ that was bringing those people said that we had poor training, that we had poor supervision, and that we were systemically racist. Now, I want you to realize that training in every police department in the state of Illinois is governed by the state training board. Okay, so if we were substandard and we were well above the standards of Illetsby, in other words, the training that we were doing, we added another cycle to the range. We added more training. We came up with programs for procedural justice that people across the country were coming to learn. If our standards were substandard, every department in the state of Illinois was substandard. Every department. So all of these things got lost in the sauce. And when the press asked me, how did I know that they were going to say that we were racist, systemic racist, poor training and poor supervision? It's because that's the other 27 investigations that they did during the Obama administration came up with.
Everything. You should have gone out to the tarmac. Maybe you would have met her there, like like Bill Clinton did secretly in the plane, talked about your golf game. Yeah. I'd like to ask, as a longtime, lifelong law enforcement officer, what advice do you have for young people? Because I see young people back in the day wanted to become German Shepherd dogs. They wanted to protect people. And I tell them, don't do it. If in Chicago, I tell these young guys, young men and women who ever ask me, I'd say, don't do it, because you won't have the mayor won't have your back. There's too much politics, and you can't do your job. What advice would you have? Because you're the mayor, you're the police chief of, I believe it's Willow Springs, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And Willow Springs, did you have any like mass shootings out there recently, 4th of July?
No, knock on wood.
So what would you counsel a young person if they wanted to become a protector of people? Because that's why people want to become cops, or a lot of them do. What would you tell them?
Well, you know what? I got to tell you this, John. If I write a book, the title would probably be, If I Could Do It All Over Again, I Would Do It All Over Again. I just found some people never find where they're supposed to be in life. And without a doubt, I was supposed to be a police officer. I got very fortunate that I kind of stepped into it. But I will also share this with you. When my daughter was living with me in Chicago, I tried to get her to take the test, and she chose not to take the test for Chicago police. She's a flight attendant today, and I'm really happy that she is. You know, this is probably the worst time that policing has suffered in the history of this country. The national politics. The most remarkable thing to me is that I met Joe Biden probably 20 years ago, and he was a big supporter of the police. And under his administration and the previous administration, I sat down with Obama, Janet Napolitano, Joe Biden, and Eric Holder, with six police chiefs from across the country for 2 hours talking through the issues. And I had the impression that the president at the time, Obama, really had a great handle on what the issues were, but he didn't do anything to fix it.
He did nothing.
Yeah.
He did nothing for Chicago. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off, but
you're right.
Superintendent or Mr. McCarthy, people were looking for Barack. When you were superintendent of Chicago police, people were looking, Barack, please do something. These are like every rank and file politicians all the way to the top. Please do something. And all you would come up with is some crappy program like care about your brother or some crap like that. And people wanted him to do what you wanted to do. Use data to data-driven attack the gangs, etc. But no, he did nothing. He walked away until Hydea Pendleton was killed, and then they sent Michelle, the phony, in to crocodile tear it all up and cry for the media. But where were they? I don't know.
I'm going to take it a step further that people don't realize. Tom Perez was the head of the Civil Rights Division at the time. Ugh. And they proudly proclaimed that they did more civil rights investigations with the same exact results every time during those 8 years than any other time in the nation's history. You know, isn't it amazing to do 28 separate investigations and come to the same exact conclusions every time? The only thing that was different, they said that the Puerto Rican police were discriminating against Dominicans instead of African Americans. I believe that was really the only difference. They come to town with a format, they take testimony, they don't look at data, and then they make conclusions. They say, aha, we knew that, right? So that's one thing that happened. The other thing that blew the top off of everything was Ferguson, Missouri.
Oh, and yeah.
Eric Holder, first of all, they blew it. I got to tell you that. I sat through an hour and a half presentation from the colonel of the Missouri State Police at the time, who was put in charge on day three, and just the missteps that happened over and over again. You don't put officers on the front line of a protest because you can turn a protest into a riot.
Yeah.
You know, you don't You don't get on top of a Bearcat and aim a sniper's rifle into a crowd and expect that they're not going to get upset. And the answer is, well, he was using a scope to see who was in the crowd. How about binoculars? Mm. This guy said every night when I got home at 7 o'clock, that's when shit seemed to hit the fan. Well, what are you going home in the riot for? Misstep after misstep. And the police turned a demonstration into a riot. Now, put that aside for a minute and realize that the state's attorney at the time, if you remember, did a painstakingly nationally televised press conference to detail why he did not indict the officer in the death of, I believe that was Michael Brown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric Holder, the United States Attorney General, went to Ferguson and said that it was a miscarriage of justice and it should never happen again. Now, first of all, Eric Holder's from the Bronx like I am. I kind of liked the guy until that point. But after that, it was like, well, dude, you're in charge of the justice system in this country, and you're saying that your system is not working? What did you do to fix it?
So well, they did not charge the officer because they had no grounds to charge him.
Exactly right. And for him to go and throw the attorney, the state's attorney under the bus like that,
right.
He was just outrageous.
Gasoline on the fire.
So, you know, that administration has done more damage to policing in this country than we could ever imagine. And it's being carried out again today, probably worse. And I'm not sure if he's still the head of the Democratic Party, but I know that Tom Perez became the head of the party. So what is that telling you? And I'm still a registered Democrat. But by the same token, this party has abandoned me. I can tell you that.
Speaking of party politics, Gary, I got to ask you, DNC is just over the horizon here. And if NASCAR taught us anything here in Chicago, this could be a crazy, crazy thing. Like you were talking about the idea of not sparking a riot. What do you see? Do you see anything positive?
No. I'm the eternal optimist. I really am. You know, and I still have faith, and I hope that everything works out right, and I hope that they are prepared. But, you know, the thing that I find ironic, and this is typical Chicago politics, is nobody has asked me about it except for the press.
Of course.
Now, if you think back to the NATO summit, that was considered the gold standard in how to handle large-scale protesting.
Have you dealt with the police in Washington over the? Have they come to you, talked to you about how you handled the NATO summit?
No, nobody. Nobody in policing has spoken to me about it. And you know what? They actually don't even have to talk to me. We did an after action report talking about what we did well, what we could have done better, yeah. and what would have lessons learned.
I remember when your troops or your law enforcement people were drilling before the events. And I saw a group, maybe 200, 300 women, female police officers. And I've always, you know, years ago when they started making female police officers, I had the misfortune of being a sexist idiot. And I would look at them and say, You can't throw down with a man, so you're just going to end up shooting them. And that was my mistake, and I admit it, I was wrong. But these young women police officers that were training were all like about 5'6", 5'7", or so in that range, and they were tough, and they were like drilling like it was like a Spartan phalanx. And I pity the fool. Did you pick them for that size? I mean, what was the deal?
No, that was we did not pick them based upon anything else but their performance. And you know, some small officers, you don't know what is packed inside there. I actually worked with a female officer in my training who was an athlete, and you know what? She was one of the best partners I ever had. She was a college athlete, and you know what?
I look
at my wife, Kristen, and she's a badass. I wouldn't want to run into her in riot gear. Let's put it that way. But, you know, we trained and trained and trained. We executed. But here's the first thing and the simplest thing. You know, my first briefing on the NATO plan comes to me from my staff, and they're talking about how they're going to go out, and the officers can only stay on post for like 20 minutes. And I'm like, why is that? They're like, well, you know, the equipment and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, you know, the gun belt and the vest. And they're like, no, the riot gear. I said, well, wait a minute. Do we want to have a riot? And they're like, what? I said, do we want to have a riot? And they said, no. I said, then why are we coming out in riot gear? And the first change that we made to our plan was we came out in the checkerboard hats, period. And if you remember, I say this with all sincerity, you couldn't have paid me to put on a helmet during that incident, because in my mind, that would have been a sign of weak leadership. We were calm, we were cool, we were in charge, we were trained, and we executed.
Were they throwing frozen water bottles at police officers?
Yeah. If you remember, my buddy Bob Tracy, who's the chief of Lewis now, he got hit in the face with a rock, and he went down, and the first thing I thought was, oh my God, this wife Brenda's going to kill me. It wasn't, are you okay? Brenda's going to kill me. And, you know, he was okay. But, you know, that was just an experience that I'm just so proud of, the way that everybody executed. Everybody worked hard. Everybody was exhausted. We came up with tactics to use bikes as barriers.
That was great.
Protesters. I mean, it was just wonderful.
You didn't push them back with riot shield. You pushed back with bikes.
And my favorite comment of the whole thing was before the event, you know, we did a number of community meetings to tell people what was going on. And my favorite question was, a woman asked, are you going to use tear gas to control the crowd? And I said, well, only if you can explain to me how tear gas controls a crowd, because you take a crowd of 100 people and you split them up into 10 crowds of 10 running in 10 different directions. That's not crowd control. And we changed the use of force continuum so that only I could authorize tear gas. We didn't wade into the crowd with helmets and shields. We didn't use the horses to push people back. We didn't use tear gas. And we made a minimum amount of arrests, but we controlled what was going on. I mean, it was a shining moment for the Chicago Police Department. Their work and their dedication was remarkable. And those are the people who still want to be police officers, but probably won't, because it's just not worth it.
Wow. I mean, Gary, I would love, wish we was a shot spotter. I mean, that technology came in a little later, and
no, I spotted it.
Right. Oh, well, then I knew it was in when Ron was in mayor. So,
and I also brought in body cams.
I hated the idea, but now I love it. I love the idea. I hated
Everybody
it.
Everybody acts better on camera. Everybody acts better on camera.
Right. So, Gary, so, oh my God. So, let me get this. So, why, how can you, anybody make an argument against the shot spotter technology, especially being a tool like what you're talking about, the identifying where, the when, the who, the how, you know, much what you need. I mean, it's a question of what do we do with this tool, right? I mean, it's not, you know, this tool's bad. It's making things bad to have things happen. It's, well, how do we react to what we get from it, right? I mean, how to talk to that? Because I feel like in an ideal world, that technology should be on every corner just to help us understand what's happening.
Yeah, if nothing else, it tells you where shots are being fired. It doesn't mean that you're going to get there in time to make an arrest. You know, you say shot spotter, I say Adam Toledo. And, you know, it's a tragedy that young man died. But you know what? I got to say this. It's a Tuesday night, 2 o'clock in the morning. A 13-year-old is hanging out on a street corner with a gangbanger who's firing shots at somebody. That is not a good scenario. And then what the gangbanger does, and unfortunately Toledo was a shorty, as they call him,
right?
He passes the gun to Toledo, who runs from the police. So instead of trying to figure out how to keep that kid off a street corner, I think a Tuesday night is still a school night, even in Chicago, at 2 o'clock in the morning. How to keep them from hanging out with a gangbanger, how to prevent them from taking a gun from a gangbanger and running from the police. What's the response? Because the gangbanger is picked up on a shot spotter. The response is no foot pursuits. What type of, you know, I've always said we take the wrong medicine for what ails us. And that tragedy could have been prevented 10 different ways before the police even became involved. But that's not what they do. And by the way, the officer who fired that shot is suffering like you can't believe. His wife has cancer. He has a young child. And that guy has gone through hell. And we talk about officer wellness all at the same time.
The stress. Stress is something that brings illness. I know that. I've lived it.
Yes.
And you have to watch it. And I think of all those officers, but particularly him, because I remember them. You know, I was writing a column then, and there was crazy nonsense coming out of the media. I turned my stomach, you know.
Yeah, me too. And you know what? The other thing that I find tragic is I immediately got his phone number and reached out to him. And to my knowledge, and I've asked him this question, he hasn't heard from anybody else from the upper echelon.
Lightfoot and the superintendent didn't call him? My God. No. Oh, man. Poor guy.
No. He got left out on an island. United States Marine, you know.
Combat veteran. Just gone through hell and on the streets of Chicago was facing it again. For those of you who don't know, in the middle of the night, he was chasing this kid. He didn't know how old he was, just somebody with a gun. And the kid turns around quick. I defy anyone who says they wouldn't have shot, because your adrenaline's pumping, your heart is pumping, it's dark. And the kid makes a sudden move, turning around. And he had no chance, no choice but to shoot. And sad thing.
Yeah, very. Well, anyway, that's Chicago politics at work.
Yeah.
Well, we went from Lori Lightfoot to panic attacks. That's good.
Yeah.
One last thing before we go, just general, not I don't want you to divulge any specifics, but generally, in a police detail, when you're giving security to a political official or elected official, how difficult is it to erase your memory of everything you saw and erase your eardrums of everything you heard? How difficult is that?
Oh, it's got to be real difficult. And I will tell you this, though. The guy, and I don't want to mention names, the guy who is running the security details in Chicago is one of my former guys. And he is the ultimate, ultimate, ultimate professional. Can't say enough about him. I've reached out to him recently just to say, hey, when are you retiring? Because I want to get you involved in my business.
Right.
Okay. I can tell you with 1,000% confidence that the guy who's in charge of that is the best guy that you're ever going to have in Chicago.
So are you guys in Willow Springs paying, like, if I'm a young police officer and I've been telling these guys, don't get out of your car no matter what, and I say go to another suburb, do you pay competitive rates? What's the rate of pay up there?
No, it's not as much as Chicago. It's that simple. What we end up with, and I'm very pleased, we've got a number of guys out of Chicago, believe it or not. When they retire, they come out and they keep working as a police officer. They collect their pension while at the same time making a few bucks. And because of the nature of this place, where they actually like the police out here, they support the police. Right. And, you know, it's not like you're chasing gangbangers down the street with guns. You know, you're doing car stops and handling family disputes and stuff like that. Fortunately, low crime out here. And with that comes less risk, and with less risk comes less money. So it's not competitive to Chicago, but we're getting there. Very positive administration as far as the police are concerned out here. The mayor is great. The town administrator is great. And they do everything they can to get some money into the coffers for the cops.
Knock on wood, it stays that way, because I know people that live out there, and it's a wonderful community.
Yeah.
I don't golf, but there's a lot of golf courses nearby.
Yeah, I do, but I don't play around here.
Smart move.
You also played football, though, till you were what 50 or something?
Yeah, 50.
Jeez. Yeah.
So I gotta push this out real quick. You know, the greatest thing that's happening in my life right now is my 7-year-old.
Oh,
yeah.
The kid is playing on an 8-year-old travel team, and he's dominating. He's just hitting the heck out of the ball, and it's one of the great joys I've ever had in my life. So, you know, life is good. Bumps and bruises here and there, but by the same token, you know, just keep putting one foot in front of the other and do the right thing, and hopefully things fall in the right fashion.
How do you deal? Are you managing this team?
Yeah, I'm coaching them. I've been coaching.
Let me ask you, because I used to coach a little bit down the street from you, and
so I could bring a little bit to the table, teaching him how to. He's got desire. He was annoyed because Saturday we had a doubleheader, and he only got 6 hits. He made out twice. So when we got home, he went out in the backyard and took another 100 swings on this thing called a hurricane.
What's it called?
It's called a hurricane. It's basically a ball on a stick that swings around in a circle.
Oh, yeah, but yeah.
He went out and took another 100 swings because he wasn't satisfied. So that's
good. There's no shortage of ways to separate dads from their money when it comes to their kids in athletics.
Oh, I can tell you. The money I'm going to invest in sports here is overwhelming.
What do you do with parents, though? Okay, 2 questions about parents. We had parents that would say to me, I taught my son how to throw a curveball, and I want him to throw it. And I said, if he throws a curveball, if I see that little index, the little finger snap down, I'm going to pull him out of the game. And guess what? You know, I did. And he got upset. And that's what the parents get upset about, that stuff. But he was like, this kid could have been a great pitcher, and he ruined his arm.
Yeah.
Well, so what do you do about stuff like that?
Well, so we've only had one problem this year with the parent complaining about the kid not getting enough playing time, getting in the order. I mean, I'm assisting. The head guy is just a sweetheart of a guy. He knows baseball. Yeah. And the thing that I'm getting with my son is making him throw over the top and just get the ball over the plate. He's got a real strong arm, but it's wild. And he's got the desire is the most important thing. He will play any sport anytime, you know, anytime it's on TV. He watches golf. I caught him watching archery in the last Olympics. I'm like, that's not a sport, man. That's a skill.
Well, he's perfect to enlist in the Chicago Fire Youth Academy because soccer is going to be a big thing in 2 years in this country.
I
know that football playing dads are freaking out because they don't want their sons to go that way. It's kind of like, I guess, if you're like me and your son became a commie, I would be upset. But
well, John,
something called soccer.
Well, you know what? You really just scared me. I thought you were encouraging me to let my son be a fireman. My stomach dropped. I was like, I thought you liked me.
Oh, that's good stuff, Gary. Well, always good to hear from you, Gary, and I'm glad you're all doing well, and it sounds like Willow Springs is treating you well.
They are, and I love it here. So, you know, working hard. Kristen works real hard, and we got a wonderful child, and that's my life right now, and it's good.
That's good. And I'm serious about the German Shepherd thing. But
yeah,
people, I mean, I love those dogs. They're shed as hell. And I'm told that I can't have one because, you know, as a stroke victim, I have difficulty standing and walking. And you got to be able to walk a dog like that and run it, you know, exhausted.
But here's something you probably don't know.
What?
My family, we used to train and show Siberian Huskies.
What? So,
yeah, I had a dog, the first one we got, Tanya, who we had her doing everything on hand signals. We didn't even have to say a word. And, you know, Kristen is very German on her mom's side. Uh-huh. And she would love to have a German Shepherd. And if we get a Shepherd, I'm going to train him in German. I think that would be cool. Right?
Do you like the breed, Gary? I'm taking up too much time, but
no, I do. And here's a story to leave you with real quick because it's hysterical. When I graduated college, at that point, my parents had three Huskies. I think each time one of the boys left the house, they got another Husky, and they came up, as did the other parents. I lived in a house with four other guys. When we graduated, they came up for graduation. We had a barbecue back at the house, and then everybody left to go home. And naturally, we went out to the bars. So, you know, my parents go home. This is before cell phones. And I come out of the bar a couple hours later, and one of my friends gives me an elbow, and he says, "Is that Tanya?" And he points across the street. Because we lived in the Bronx, I trained the dog not to step off the curb. And the dog tracked us to the bar and was sitting for like 2 hours waiting for us to come out across the street. I'm like, "Tanya," and she goes nuts, right? I go across and I grab her, and we get back to my apartment, and I call my mom. I said, "Mom, you missing something?" She's like, "Oh my God, where's Tanya?" I said, "She's here with me. She's safe." And naturally, she licked the tops off the beer cans, and she was hungover for like 2 weeks.
Perfect. Gary, stay safe. Stay out of the city. Or if you come in, leave before noon. Okay.
My head is always on a swivel, John. I've been in some pretty tough neighborhoods over
I know you have.
I'm okay. Let's put it that way. Thanks, guys.
Gary, and God bless you and your family. And
real pleasure. Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks,
guys.
Buddy. See you.
All right. Bye-bye.
For Gary Francis McCarthy, former police chief of Chicago, police superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, currently chief of police in Willow Springs, the former candidate for mayor of Chicago, and for Jeff Carlin, future physics teacher, executive producer, WGN Radio, my friend, and he's producing something that I hope you'll like that will drop in the future. The voice of the past, the voice of my father. And for me, John Cass, executive editor of John Cass News, your place for a decent cup of common sense on WGN. Join us for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.